Hello, everybody, and welcome to the American Ninja Warrior Recap Podcast for RHAP. We're recapping episode 4 in Oklahoma City. I am your host, Taryn Armstrong, and I'm with the lovely Lita. Lita, how are you?
I'm so good, Taryn. How are you?
I am fantastic because I just watched this episode. I just finished right before we started recording.
So you're ready?
Very ready, yeah. You know, I just watched somebody just barely not get the fastest time, so...
Oh, yeah. Who could that be? Have to wait until the very end.
You'll never know.
Yep.
Anything going on?
Not much. A lot of my TV shows came back this week, so I'm at the busiest part of the year in terms of watching television and giving Big Brother a go this year, so that's one more that's coming on tonight. Sure you're excited about that?
So excited. I mean... There's lots of talks about twists and such, which has not got me excited, but, and I can complain about that here because people don't watch Big Brother and they don't care.
I barely care.
Exactly. So, getting into the city episode, we've got some new obstacles. First, we obviously have the floating steps, which we have every, city. And as everyone knows, the floating steps are the little pinball machine like thingies that you jump back and forth on. Get onto the rope, and they always have trouble getting across that rope distance.
Yeah, the silent killer, the rope from the floating steps to the obstacle course, which I had never thought about before a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like it really does sap your strength if it takes you a while to get off of that, but it happens.
Yeah.
Then we have a new obstacle, the ring swing, which has an interesting name. One of two swings in this course. In this one, they grab onto a ring and they swing across. They have to hook it on a little hook and then reach across, grab another one, jump it off the hook, and then swing off to the platform.
Yeah.
What do you think of this obstacle?
Well, this is an obstacle that you have to do like a full pull up while you're like swinging to get it up onto the rope. You have to jump it onto the rope. You can't just, onto the hook. You can't just land it. You have to like use your whole body to get that hook on there. So that, looks really impossible to me. It wasn't as big of a killer as I thought it was going to be, but it's an interesting obstacle. It looks cool. It looks impressive. I think it's a solid new obstacle.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was fun to watch. I think it allows for people that are good at this sort of thing to kind of show off and like breeze through it, make that big jump off the end, which I always enjoy. Next up is the log runner, which was a very difficult obstacle for a lot of ninjas this time around. Definitely was the obstacle of the night, I think.
Yeah. I mean, this is one that even when the big names run it, people who I have a lot of confidence in, this is the obstacle where I'm thinking if they can get past this, then they're going to be fine. Because I feel like this is the one that you can really just have some bad luck on. If you just misjudge it by an inch and set those logs spinning, you're just done.
Yeah, just the smallest little misstep and you're completely helpless, basically. Something that I thought was interesting on this one was that we saw a few people kind of do the crawl over it.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because it felt like that might actually be easier than trying to run across it, but nobody ever tried crawling from the start. I wonder if that was against the rules.
Yeah. I mean, Matt said something weird where someone fell on it at one point and he said, "Now you are allowed to use your arms on this as long as you're moving forward," which like what, as opposed to people trying to like crawl backwards and start over. Like I thought that was weird. So it made me think that maybe there are more rules, just the fact that he even mentioned that. But I also think it would be really risky to try to go on it on your belly just because there's so much room to just have any part of your body give out on that. I feel like you would have to be really rigid the whole time.
Well, I think it depends on your height. I think that the tall people could easily just crawl over it. Not easily, but I think there's a lot less risk in that than trying to run over and then falling and catching yourself or whatever. But I'm assuming that in order to crawl, you had to try to run first and then catch yourself. So
yeah, and for people who may not be aware, I think that the logs are like, what, 4 feet apart?
Yeah, pretty far.
Yeah, you're not just, this isn't a little step. You have to do a little bit of a jump from one log to another, which makes it really, really hard because you have impact when you land on it. You're not just stepping.
Yeah, and they spin like crazy, like very easily they'll go. Just the slightest, you misjudge by just an inch and you're done.
Yeah.
Then we have the tire swing, another returning obstacle. This one is always a difficult one. You know, the people that are able to get through it, they tend to get through it very quickly. They have the very long reach and they can just reach over, grab the next one, reach over, grab the next one. But if you're not able to do that, they're very difficult to maneuver. They wobble back and forth and have different kinds of movements. And most of the athletes, I think, that we see this have a lot of trouble with it.
Yeah. This one is sort of hard to tell what's going on TV, I think, because at first I thought that they were just like totally hollow tires that you could just grip with as much of your hand as you can. But there are little ledges inside each of them. And the last one is only like a 2-inch ledge. So I did not realize how much it was about like that fingertip strength that we see on a lot of obstacles, just because until they showed the inside with a camera angle, like you can't totally tell what's going on.
Yeah. Then we have a new obstacle, the bar hop, which is basically like the kiddie version of the stage 3 final obstacle, where you're holding onto a bar and you have to jump across to another ledge, then transition to a bar in the middle, and then transition to the next bar, do another jump, and then you're done. Pretty straightforward.
Yeah, I like the name of it. I wish that they would do more cute names of obstacles like bar hop.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised that Akbar didn't go crazy with like alcohol references on the bar hop. You know, he could say like, oh, and he goes down into the water. It's a sobering experience. There's so many things that you could do with that. So I was a little disappointed in Akbar's lack of wordplay on the bar hop.
Apparently they need to hire a new announcer.
That's what that means.
Yeah. Meaning you. They need to hire you as the new announcer.
I'll write Akbar's jokes.
Then finally, of course, the warped wall, at the new height, 14 and a half feet. Overall, what did you think of this course?
I thought this was a pretty good course. I think that, like you said, the log runner is just, I mean, it's just such a killer. And that's a little disappointing when I think the agility obstacle is the one that gets everybody out. I don't really love to see that because then I feel like more people are losing because of mistakes than because of an inability to complete the course. That said, it is really fun to watch people on the log runner. You see a lot of people do really different things. Overall, I thought it was a solid course. Not my favorite that we've seen. I think last week was probably my favorite.
I like this one. I thought the difficulty was pretty spot on, except for the log runner, which I'm never a fan of these agility ones that we just lose a lot of good people on these. I don't mind it in the finals, like the Vegas course, because that's the big thing. But to see somebody go out this early on an obstacle like that in the qualifying rounds, it's just disappointing to see.
Yeah. So overall, a good course. I do really like the ring swing. I'll go on record saying that I think that that's a good and very fair obstacle. Silk Slider is still my favorite, which we have not seen yet. So I have high hopes for Philadelphia because I love the Silk Slider. But ring swing is a good second obstacle.
And it also has I prefer ring swing to bar hop, just because it's that difficult to say.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. So first up, we have Michael Ray Garvin, a 29-year-old former NFL player. His claim to fame is that he is the world's most jacked athlete meme.
Yeah, I have never seen this meme.
Me neither.
But like any person who's an internet sensation on American Ninja Warrior, I've never actually heard of them. I thought it was weird the way that they were talking about this guy as if he had like actually set some Guinness World Record for being the most jacked athlete. Like they kept saying that like he is officially the world's most jacked athlete. And it's just like, just because you put meme text over a picture of someone, you know, it doesn't make it a fact.
Yeah, and the way that he talked about it wasn't like, yeah, somebody, it turned into an internet meme. It was like, somebody took a photo and then somebody else labeled me the most jacked athlete in the world.
Yeah, as if that person had any sort of authority.
He gets through the floating steps fine, but on the ring swing, he has a lot of trouble getting the second ring to release. He's kind of swinging back and forth and he's going against his momentum when he tries to jump it over the hook. He does the jump at the absolute worst moment every single time he tries. And unfortunately, that is enough to send him down into the water.
Yes, he definitely lacked body control and is one of those people who you can kind of see just tries to muscle his way through obstacles, which we always criticize. even the world's most jacked athlete, which, you know, not to detract anything from his muscle because he is very muscular, but he could not figure out the strategy on that obstacle.
Unfortunately not. Next up, we had Brian Doom, the 39-year-old Air Force tanker pilot. He calls himself Major Doom.
Yes.
Yeah, Matt had a lot of fun with this guy's name, as he has a lot of fun with his own name. Matt said he has a Legion of Doom fans in the stands.
I don't even get that.
The Legion of Doom.
Is that?
Okay. Well, not only is it just sort of a thing, but it's also a Big Brother reference.
Oh.
Because Matt is a Big Brother fan.
Oh, well, we will soon have that in common, but not yet. He also said when he got to the course, he said, "This course is doomed," which is fine as far as contestant puns go.
Yes, this was an interesting job. He's basically the gas station for airplanes, which is a very difficult job, I imagine.
Yeah, because you have to actually fly your gas station to a plane and fill it with gas while it's in the air, if I understood that correctly.
Yes, he would refuel planes in midair, which is insane.
Yeah, I would have that would have never occurred to me as a thing that needs to happen.
But it does. So he goes through the course without too much issue until he gets to the log runner, where he falls and he catches himself and he crawls across. He's the first person we see do this, which was interesting because it was the first time we saw the log runner this episode. He manages to get across. Then he even gets all the way through the tire swing and gets to the bar hop. And he doesn't have the right technique here. He's not able to get enough momentum swinging into the jump. And he just kind of reaches his arms too far forward. And he couldn't hold on. Couldn't brace himself enough for the impact.
Yeah, I couldn't totally tell if he was just totally gassed out from the previous obstacle or if he just didn't really know how to approach this. It wasn't totally clear. But either way, he is out at the beginning of the jump at the bar hop.
Yes. Next, we have the first of many montages for this episode, Mark Coulam. He had a turtle that he brought to the course and was watching him from the sidelines, but his turtle just couldn't watch as he goes out on the ring swing.
Yes.
And then we got Bill Domke. I don't know. He had a dog on the sidelines.
Yeah, he did. This was the pet montage.
Yes, it was. It was almost the pet montage, as it's almost many other, like there's, it seems like there's almost a theme in like half of these montages, but it's just for two of them.
Yeah.
Yes, he is the second pet owner. He has a dog on the sidelines. And unfortunately, as Matt says, he bit it at the log runner.
That's barely a dog joke. You can make that about almost any animal.
Very true. Finally, we have Elliot Jolivet,
who does not have a pet.
He has no animals, no pets, but also down at the log runner.
Indeed.
Then we have Max Stringer, the 47-year-old safety specialist. His whole thing is that he has 7 daughters. And my immediate thought was, what are the odds that you get 7 daughters in a row?
I have no idea.
I had planned on calculating it for the podcast, but I forgot.
You can't ask me things about genetics or math, because you won't get a good answer. But he did have one of the weirder Matt Eisman introductions, who said, "If you like the Brady Bunch, you'll love this guy." And I had no idea where this was going. I thought that there was, I don't know, maybe his forefathers worked on the Brady Bunch. He was the son of someone on it. I don't know. But I was very disappointed, because that is loosely at best related to the Brady Bunch, having 7 daughters. Brady Bunch only had 3 daughters.
Oh my.
Yeah.
Well, he calls himself the Ninja 9 because there's 9 people in his family, including himself and his wife.
And they all start with S, except him.
Oh, really? I didn't notice that.
Yes, all of his daughters and I believe his wife start with the letter S.
Wow, that's okay.
Probably so they can have like monogram backpacks and stuff, hand me down.
They should be really happy that none of them have a lisp.
Yes, as far as we know.
Something interesting that I learned during this run is that apparently Akbar has 4 children.
Oh.
I didn't know that.
Do they all start with A?
I hope so. I'm a big fan of alliteration, so.
Yeah. No shade at his daughters, but their signs look terrible. Some of the worst ninja signs I've ever seen. Did you notice that?
No, I didn't.
Oh, they all had signs for their dad and they were a mess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't usually look at little girls' signs with a critical eye, but
I mean, all of them are under 12, so I guess it's fair, but not the best signage.
Okay, well, we'll tell them to improve for next time. I think what they really like about this guy, apart from his seven daughters, is they even mention it. He's the couch to course athlete. He lost 40 pounds in the last year and was able to get on this course and have a pretty good run. He's sort of the Cerie Fields of American Ninja Warrior, or at least they want to try to make somebody the Cerie Fields.
Yes, definitely. They love that. This show inspired someone to actually change their life, not just like work out more, but actually like change their entire lifestyle.
Definitely. So he gets all the way to the tire swing, but on that middle tire, he runs out of gas and he loses his grip.
Yeah, I was impressed by how well he did. I actually thought that this was going to be a little bit of a pat on the back run, that they just wanted to show this guy who changed his life because of the show. But yeah, he did really well. His fall was actually a little surprising. I thought that he looked strong enough on the tire swing, sort of fell out of nowhere. But yeah, impressive run.
Yeah, definitely was impressive for somebody who lost 40 pounds in the last year, but that's how it goes. So yes, we go from montage to Matt Stringer to montage. This one is nothing too themey about this one, but
like kind of odd balls, I guess.
Yeah, maybe. Speaking of, first we have Eric Amati Wright, who wore an inflatable toucan around his waist.
Like a floaty, not just, yes.
It wasn't like a toucan that was hugging him. Right. It was, it was like a little floaty toucan preparing for the water, I imagine. And does not disappoint as far as the water goes, because he goes down on the ring swing.
Yeah.
We then get Amanda Smith, who is, and I just wrote down like all their little silly lines for each of these people. She's the geologist and she got rocked at the log runner.
Yeah. And I would have been interested to see this because I can't name any lady geologists or any geologists, but I think that female geologist is like an interesting thing that I would maybe watch a TV show about.
Well,
it's not this rocked. TV show.
She got rocked at the log runner. Yeah, so not going to see her. Then we get Flip White Jr.,
the second most famous flip in American Ninja Warrior now.
Apparently, he's the Harlem Globetrotter, and he got shot down at the tire swing.
I have a question that you probably won't know the answer to either. So I don't know anything about basketball. I'm a big sports fan, but my hometown does not have a basketball team, so I know nothing about it. I thought that the Harlem Globetrotters were no longer an actual basketball team. I thought that they were like a performance group that does things with basketballs.
Now, all of my knowledge about the Harlem Globetrotters comes from reality TV. Mainly The Amazing Race and this show. And as far as I'm aware, they are mostly performance-based. I don't think they actually play competitive games against people.
Okay, that's what I thought. But Akbar said something about him being like a point guard. He said something about him having a basketball position. So maybe he also plays basketball.
I think they potentially, you know, they have positions. They play like mock games, maybe. Maybe they play actual games, but they're like all about the showing off stuff. I'm sure people will let us know in the comments.
Yeah. We keep getting hit with sports that I know nothing about. When a hockey player tries American Ninja Warrior, he will not do well, but I will know a lot about it.
Yes. So next we get Nate Burkhalter, a 30-year-old oil and gas engineer. Interesting guy here. He spends his free time going overseas and drilling water wells for communities in need. And obviously goes on to explain how this in particular is going to help him win American Ninja Warrior.
Obviously,
yeah.
Because everyone drills wells in Africa to prepare for American Ninja Warrior. But yeah, I mean, obviously a very good person. This is a very noble thing to do. And he backs it up with a really impressive performance.
Yes, and he calls himself Ninja Nate, which I thought was not particularly clever, but we still got those alliterations going on, so there's at least that.
Yes.
He waited in the walk-on line for the last two seasons and finally got a call this year. I don't know why they wouldn't have called him in previous years with this sort of backstory, unless he just recently started doing it. But yes, he is the first person to finish the course. He's one of the first people we see to use the right kind of momentum on the ring swing. He flies through the tire swing. He stops after he finishes. He turns around. He starts talking trash to the tire swing.
He also sets the precedent for using the reverse group, grip.
The switch grip.
Yes, the switch grip on the bar hop, which is going to prove to be very effective.
Yes, very effective, and not very effective for people who don't use that grip.
Yes.
He goes right up the wall, the warped wall, and he is the first finisher of the night. He says he's been waiting for this for 3 years.
Yes, and all of his friends are wearing backwards hats, and I didn't know if that was a thing or if his friends just dress poorly. But all three of his friends that go and say congratulations are wearing backwards hats.
I can't comment.
It would be like Captain NBC's wig or something. I didn't know if this was
maybe
backwards hat gang, but
maybe it's the kind of thing where it's everybody, you know, wears the bad thing in solidarity.
Yeah.
Like,
maybe.
Like they're all ashamed of his backwards hat wearing, but they all just kind of do it to be like, no, listen, you know, we're all Spartacus. We're all going to wear the bad hat.
Yeah. That's true friendship.
Yes. Next we get Allison Topperwine, the 38-year-old nonprofit founder. She is a single mom battling Parkinson's disease, which I thought was incredible that she's able to do anything like this. What did you think of Allison?
I mean, this was just really incredibly inspiring. I definitely got really choked up during this whole thing. I mean, it's sort of timely because Muhammad Ali just died of Parkinson's, and it's something that is a little bit more in the public consciousness than it maybe usually is. The only celebrities that people have ever heard of with Parkinson's are men, as far as I'm concerned. So it was really fascinating to see a woman, a single mom, struggle with this. She blogs about it on the Huffington Post. She's very public about it on the internet, which I think is really inspiring. And she started training for Ninja Warrior because exercise is the only thing that reduces the side effects of Parkinson's, which I think is just really noble. I can't really get myself to exercise for any reason. So for her to not give up and to go out and do that is just unbelievable to me.
Yes. And very touching story. However, I kind of laughed in the middle of it because it might've just been me, but there's a clip of her with her daughter, and her daughter is hugging her, and her daughter says, "I love you with my whole entire heart, mommy, and I don't want to let go."
Oh, her daughter is an android. Yeah.
Totally straight faced, zero emotion in the voice. I was just like, oh my God, this is terrifying.
Yeah, I also laughed at that because that child is very creepy. Now she will definitely never come on the podcast if we ever extend an invitation. It was just very, it was not her daughter's fault. Her daughter is adorable. It was definitely an overly produced moment where the producer told her exactly what to say. Yeah,
exactly. That's what it felt like.
Yes, absolutely no offense to the great Allison or her daughter.
Another thing I thought was weird, her shirt. I thought that they were like blurring something out on her shirt, like they were, you know, blurring some logo out, but it was just, I think, the logo. It just seemed like it was very confusing to me.
Oh, I did not notice that.
Again, I could be the only crazy person who noticed that, so don't mind me. Yes, so she gets through all the way to the end of the floating steps, but unfortunately was not able to transition from the rope to the platform. I noticed that she kept stopping all of her momentum on the rope with her foot before she actually got to the platform because she was trying to hook in, which is what many people do, but she just needed to get a little further in before she stopped that momentum.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of points where she could have gone for the jump and would have been fine, but I understand that that's like sort of a scary thing to do that can seem risky while you're on it. She did have an incredible save where she almost fell off of one of the stones, one of the platforms, but she held on with just her arms and pulled herself up, which showed a lot of arm strength. And she also hung on to that rope for a really long time. Yeah. There was a lot of fight in her. So nothing but respect for Allison Topperwine.
Next up is Brian Burkhart, the 22-year-old law student. This is probably, I would say it was probably one of the strangest packages we got, but I'm going to reserve that for later in the night. He's the guy who's just insanely obsessed with becoming class president. He only lost by 20 votes, and he really wants to win Ninja Warrior so that he can become class president next year.
This wins the weekly award for why did they show us this? Any part of it, the run, the package. I don't understand why they showed this to us, but I did learn that law schools have class presidents, which I did not know. That seems like something that is left behind an undergraduate. Also, he lost by 20 votes, but I know at least the school where I go to college, the law school, I think only has like 20 people per class. That might be unusual, but that's what I was thinking about, is that the law classes, at least at the law school at my college, is very, very small. So, yeah, this was the biggest reach for a topic of a package I can think of.
It seemed to me like he was pretty clearly joking, like the whole thing was a joke, which, you know, I guess was kind of funny. I don't know. I guess it didn't like come across maybe how they thought it would, but I don't know. For the most part, I thought it was amusing.
Yeah, I don't know. It just, like, even if it's a joke, it's just not that funny. I think it might have been a vehicle just for Matt and Akbar to make a lot of political references. It's like the closest to a politician they've had in a while.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, so he tackles the course. He flies off of the ring swing. He has a really, really fast and reckless pace, but it backfires like crazy on the tire swing. I believe he's on that rope for a really long time, trying to grip onto the tire, and then just his grip gives out and he goes into the water.
Yeah, and he did the angry scream, which I generally find pretty off-putting when contestants do that. I think there's a difference between screaming to release energy and slapping the water and yelling when you fall noise. Not the greatest look.
I suppose not.
Especially for someone who's apparently used to losing, and great leaders are not put down by defeat, according to him.
They rise again and win Ninja Warrior and then become class president, and then everything is happy and nice.
Yes.
Next, we get another montage. This was the montage of the Kevins and one not Kevin.
Yeah, and I laughed so much because we got a stock trader named Kevin, much like Kevin Bull, I believe, is a stock trader, right?
Yeah.
And they said that he was bullish on the course, which is a stock pun, a bull market. But also, he's a stock trader named Kevin, and they said the word bull. So I thought that was very funny.
Even going beyond just the bull pun, the market crashes when he fails to dismount on the tire swing.
Yeah, there were a lot of layers to the to the jokes on this Kevin's run.
We also get Kevin Klein, who made it to Vegas in the last two seasons, but he goes out on the log runner. That's going to happen a lot in this course. And we also get the non-Kevin, Jessel Bozeman, who fails at the bar hop.
Not much more to say about that.
We then get our next consecutive Brian. So we got two Brians and two Kevins. Brian Beckstrand, the 37-year-old Lowe's manager. This is the guy who built a Ninja Warrior course for his family, in quotation marks, in his backyard.
Yeah, there were a lot of really similar names in a row, and I got kind of confused. There was Beckstrand, Burkhart, and Burkhalter were the last three people, so I thought that that was weird and couldn't keep straight who was who. But yes, this was the guy who has just a totally despondent wife because she will never get her pool.
Nope.
Because he has built a course with more than 40 obstacles, which definitely was for his family and not him. Definitely a selfless act on his part.
I feel like they love the clips of the disgruntled like wife or pastor or whoever.
Yeah.
Just like, yeah, they made a course and it happens.
I mean, I love when they show that too, because I always think it's weird when, you know, the package is like, oh, I just had I have a newborn son and I'm running for him. And I'm like, and your wife is pleased with you, like training for 6 hours a day. Like, I would be so mad.
Yes. So he's been here before. He made it far in last year's finals, but he was up against a very tough field and didn't move on to Vegas, although he probably would have in most circumstances, having made it that far. Something I noted when we watched this guy, backyard ninjas, very good. They have a lot of time to practice on those obstacles, and this guy did not disappoint. He had a very smooth run and just clears the course easily.
Yes, bend it like Beckstrand, as someone said. The only thing I was a little bit nervous about was him being a little bit too comfortable on obstacles that he's done a million times, such as like the warped wall, which he's probably only done in the 14 foot instead of the 14 and a half. Something like that, where he would just kind of go into autopilot, but that did not happen at all. He really kept his focus and he did a really great job.
Yes, and it's pointed out to us that he lands on top of the log runner logs. He's tall enough that he's able to do that, and that's why he's able to get through it so easily. The logs don't roll as he runs atop of them.
Yes.
Next up is Adima Cope, the 33-year-old IT specialist. This guy's very talented. He can do a lot of things. He can do IT, he can do coding. He's a designer, a sewer, a roller skater. He can do everything.
Almost all of those are related, but you lose me at roller skater.
He also has a son with spinal bifida, which is very sad. What do you think of Adima?
I mean, this was another really inspiring story that we saw. His son can't walk, so he needs to be carried everywhere. So that is a great motivation for getting in shape for Adima. And yeah, I mean, It's too bad that this wasn't in time for the Father's Day special, because this was a really nice father-son package. So I was definitely rooting for this guy.
Yes, I loved that his son was sleeping as he starts the run.
Oh, yeah.
And then wakes up at about the second obstacle to watch his dad. He very nearly falls off the course after he does the dismount on the ring swing, but manages to hold on and gets through all the way to the tire swing, where he loses his grip on the third tire.
Yeah, he had a really awkward grip on the last tire. He just seemed like he put himself in a bad spot and couldn't hold on.
Yes. We then get the Evan Dollard segment about the Spartan show.
I fast forwarded this.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically all we need to say about it. I mean, he just advertises the Spartan show. We get to see some very quick clips of some ninjas competing on the Spartan show. I still have not watched it. I have not had the time, but I will try to check it out at some point, just because, you know, gotta watch those ninjas.
Yeah, there are so many commercials during the commercial breaks for Spartan that I think I thought it was just a commercial for Spartan, and I fast forwarded that, but sounds like I didn't miss too much.
Next up is Lance Pecus, the 29-year-old rancher. He is somebody that the show loves.
Well, didn't they say he's on Spartan also?
Yeah, I think he did compete.
Yeah,
on.
So now they love him even more because of all this cross promotion.
Oh, of course. Yes, they love Lance Pecus, the cowboy ninja, but very disappointing run this time. He's unable to clear the qualifying course for the first time in at least three years, which I believe is as long as he's been competing, I think.
Yeah, you didn't even talk about his super important package where he has a new job. Yeah, Lance Pecus, I don't know if he lost weight or if he's always been wearing the same jeans and he just lost weight or whatever, but his jeans were looking a little like hammer pants. They were very loose. So I don't know if he just refused to buy new jeans, or if he bought some ones with a little more range of motion or something. But those jeans, not Lance Pecus's best.
Yes, he has trouble with the ring swing as well. He keeps trying to hook the ring too early in his swing, and he just keeps falling short. But ultimately, that doesn't really end up costing him, because he still gets through and then falls on the log runner. Just minor slip up, falls straight into the water, and that's it. That's it for Lance Pecus. This is a J.J. Woods kind of thing.
Yeah, and in his interview with Christine, she asks if he's going to come back, and there's a long pause before he says definitely. Did not sound like a definitely.
It was a definitely that was like, definitely.
Yeah, maybe he'll see how Spartan pans out. Maybe that'll be his go-to.
Next up is Artis Thompson III, the 28-year-old personal trainer. He calls himself, either he calls himself or they call him AT3. He is the second guy we've seen so far with just one leg.
Yeah, he lost it in a motorcycle accident, and he also lost his brother in a motorcycle accident.
And he still rides motorcycles.
Which, I mean, I guess good for him, not letting it stop him from doing what he loves. I went whitewater rafting once and fell out of the raft and had a scary experience. And guess who's never going whitewater rafting again ever? And that was just like one moment of fear for me. So I respect people who can get back on that horse or that motorcycle, because I would never do that.
Guess who I'm never inviting to my white river rafting. I'm just gonna end it there. I'm not gonna continue with that joke. This guy does not take off his prosthetic.
I think that's a good call.
Definitely a good call, considering what happens on the log runner. He gets through the floating steps. It takes him a while to get off that rope, but he does eventually do it. But then he quickly falls, almost immediately falls on the log runner, as you would expect. I mean, people with full control of both legs are having tons of difficulty with this. I can't imagine. I imagine it's completely impossible to get through this without resorting to what he ended up resorting to. He goes for the crawl method, and this was outstanding. This was what I wanted the previous one-legged guy to be. Like, this guy was not hyped up nearly as much, but I felt very impressed. I was surprised. I thought he wasn't going to make it through this obstacle, but he manages to grit it out. He's able to hook his leg on the back log every time he moves forward, and just barely hold on. And you can see him just grimacing in pain. What an amazing performance.
Yeah, and underreported that he does really a great job on the ring toss. Since he has that prosthetic on him, he's able to generate momentum, which we saw was a problem with the prior contestant. who had one leg. So that was really great. And yeah, I mean, I was stunned that he got through this. And it was a very early palm, crazy, healthy, wonderful run of the night, which said to me loud and clear that Casey is not going to do very well.
Not a good sign for her, for
sure.
It
also, I thought that Daniel Gill was also not going to do very well because of that, because I figured that they would do one of those two.
I had complete confidence in Daniel Gill.
Oh, well.
That guy's a wonder.
Yeah, but that at least read to me, obviously they would give it to Casey if she did it. I mean,
definitely.
No doubt. So did not have high hopes for Miss Catanzaro.
Yes. So he loses it on the tire swing, but absolutely amazingly gutsy performance on the log runner. A lot to be proud of. Definitely should have been. I can't imagine being there in the crowd. It must have been super emotional. But next we get yet another montage. We got Kim Proctor, who waited 12 days on the walk-on line and falls on the log runner.
Classic.
Yes. Not a good end to those 12 days. Then we get Grant Clinton, who had a stroke and almost died 6 months ago.
Jesus.
Yes, I had paused it right after I had a stroke and almost died to write his name down. And so it sounded like Matt just said, Grant Clinton had a stroke and almost died. And I was like, oh my God, on the course? But no, it was 6 months ago, which isn't even that crazy, like that much less crazy than on the course. 6 months ago, had a stroke and almost died. Incredible that he managed to get all the way to the tire swing and he almost clears it too. He just fails on the dismount.
Yes.
Next up is Cass Clawson, who just clears the course. Yeah. Our first montage clear.
Chaos Cass Clawson.
He's a mix between Chaos Cass and Spencer Clawson from Big Brother. Nowhere near anything like those two people. All right. Next up, we get John Stewart.
Not that John Stewart.
Yes, not that John Stewart. But yes, that John Stewart, the old one, who is the oldest man to get up the warped wall and clear a city's final course. He's the construction manager at 54 years old now. Not much to say. He didn't really have a package this time, which I thought was weird. Maybe just because he keeps beating his own record over and over. They're just like, yeah, we're not going to. I mean, they have no problem making a big deal of like any woman that gets any kind of record, like
right.
Inventing records for that. But I guess if it's the same guy just beating the same record over and over, they don't care as much.
Yeah, he got the half measure where he wasn't montaged, but we came in at like the very end of his run, which is always kind of weird. But I was surprised and happy. I was like, oh, I love this guy. I was wondering if we were going to see him.
This guy's amazing. Like, yeah. He's slow and steady, but he clears the course. He forgets to hit the buzzer. He's cheering to Akbar and Matt, and Akbar's like, hit the buzzer. And he's oh, thank you.
Yeah.
And yes, he breaks his own record. He's now, again, the oldest person to get up the warped wall at 54. Probably not going to be beaten anytime soon.
No, probably not. His name is also spelled exactly the same as the famous John Stewart, J-O-N.
Yes, it is.
H. So when you're Googling this guy, just use a lot of keywords.
Definitely. John Stewart Ninja.
Yes.
Next, we get Scott Stoddard, the 38-year-old video game stuntman. I felt like they were really pandering to the younger audience with this guy. They were like, isn't this so awesome? He's a video game stuntman.
Yeah, I also I thought it was interesting to see this because this is what Frosty from Survivor China does for a living. And I know that he does parkour. So it's interesting to me that that's like a go-to thing for free runners and athletes of that type to do this job.
You do know, I believe Frosty has also competed on American Ninja Warrior.
I did not know that. Oh my God. How'd he do?
I think he actually did pretty decently. And it was really early on. And I don't think he's competed in a while.
Well, yeah. So I thought it was interesting to see that they go for similar types of athletes for this video game job.
He wants to beat the Ninja Warrior game. It's just like a game to him. He wants to, you know, prove to the designers that he can beat their game. But then right as he's about to start, they show people holding like rubber sharks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of noted in passing. Yeah, they're holding rubber sharks because he owns the biggest rubber shark collection in the world.
Which is what, like 4 rubber sharks?
Now, so how is this not his main story, right? Like, this is insane. You can't just reference this in passing. Yeah, video game stuntman and also, just owns a huge rubber shark collection.
Well, I just feel like I would have liked to know how many rubber sharks that is, because to me, that seems like it wouldn't necessarily be a terribly hard record to set, because if it's not something that anyone else is doing, then it's probably not that hard to own the world's largest rubber shark collection. So I would like to see more about this if this is a competitive title.
Maybe it's not that impressive, and that's why he just sticks to biggest.
Maybe. Biggest and only rubber shark collection yeah, in the world.
It's like how I would tell people that I was in the top three triple jumpers at my school, and there were three of us.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I was the best girl on my squash team. I was the only girl on my squash team.
See, there you go.
Yeah.
We're getting the hang of this.
Yeah. And to be fair, there might be a huge rubber shark collecting community. My father has the largest Pez dispenser collection in Western Pennsylvania, and it's huge. And people don't realize that that's something that there are conventions for and, you know, is a really competitive collecting world. So you never know.
Yes, so he calls himself the Shark Ninja because of the shark collection and slips on the log runner. Disappointing finish to this guy.
I had high hopes for this guy. He looked really in shape.
Yeah, it really felt like they were building him up to be a person that does well, but slips on the log runner. Maybe they're building up the log runner in this segment and not him.
Yeah, log runner has the winner's edit.
Yeah.
Speaking of which.
Next up is another montage. We get Rose Wetzel, the top female Spartan racer in the world, who falls on the log runner, of course. Then we get Andrew Lowe's, who is a veteran, and he clears the course. And we get Karsten Williams, another veteran. This is the guy, his mom is always on the sidelines cheering him on, and he also clears the course.
Yeah, I was a little sad about Rose Wetzel. I like her a lot. I wonder if she's competing on Spartan.
I'm sure she is. She's the top female Spartan racer in the world.
Maybe she's too good. Maybe she's done with that. You never know.
Maybe she doesn't want to degrade herself.
Yeah, to reality show Spartaning. Spartaning.
Then we get Sam San, the 49-year-old gym owner. Love Sam San. Always fun to watch. Always a lot of heart. Not much to say about Sam San this time. I don't think he gets a... Did he get a package this time?
He did not. I was actually glad and a little bit surprised that they showed him at all, just because of the trend that we've been seeing towards these older super veterans not getting their runs showed or getting invited back in some cases. So I was really happy to see him. The universal respect for him is just really incredible. I mean, everyone shows up for Sam San. Everybody loves him. It was really moving to see that.
Yeah, and his first run on American Ninja Warrior, where he injures his ankle and still gets very far on the course, still to this day, one of the most impressive and heart-throbbing runs for me. He goes all the way through to the log runner and falls, catches himself, gets back up, and just kind of steps off, which I thought was very impressive.
Yeah, it was, we've seen a lot of very ugly exits from the log runner. People who fall and recover, even it's usually not very graceful, but he just manages to make it look not that hard when you fall just to get back up on the log runner.
Yep. Then he goes into the tire swing. He gets a very big swing. He tries to get all the way across to the other side of it, which I thought was a very good strategy. Unfortunately, does not pay off because he fumbles the grab and has to go swing back, avoid the platform because you can't step back onto the platform once you've gone onto the rope, and then swing back again and then get onto the tire swing. He has a lot of trouble on these tire swings. He tries to get the first transition to the second tire swing on the wrong side, but with the tire upright, which was just kind of awkward. Wastes a ton of strength there and then eventually just loses his grip. He tries to grab the top of the third tire, but there's no opening there. It's closed off. He has to grab the bottom. And unfortunately, by the time he gets his second hand under that bottom, his grip has lost too much and he falls into the water.
Yeah, this was definitely a heartbreaker. I mean, this is someone that everyone is rooting for at home, the other athletes in the stands. You know, no one wants to see this happen to Sam San.
Yeah. Next up is Kyle Mendoza, the 26-year-old FedEx delivering man / internet sensation.
Parkour sensation. So obviously I knew all about this guy. No, I didn't.
He's got over 26 million views and 100,000 followers, Lita.
And none of them are me. Amazingly.
You're living under a rock.
I really am. I'm not in the parkour part of the internet.
Yeah, usually we see these internet sensations and they're not always impressive, but the parkour ones usually are, I feel like. And this guy does not disappoint. He had very good control throughout his run. He does get turned around on the ring swing, but is able to control his body, gets back into the right position and gets through it. Speeds through the log runner, really speeds through the tire swing. Very efficient, very fast, and finishes with the fastest time of the night.
and has time to do like 3 backflips during the course, like in the beginning, in the middle, and at the end.
Yes, very very Levi Muhlenberg of him.
Yes, and he also is a very talented FedEx driver.
Oh, yes.
He's one of the best in the country. He can deliver, what was it, 44 packages in 2 hours or something?
I believe that was it, yes.
Yes, and he's also very adorable, which is worth mentioning.
It's funny because he, that is like exactly what I would do if I were a FedEx driver. Like, like I'd be like, okay, I'm a FedEx driver, but I'm going to be like the best FedEx. I'm going to sprint to every house. I'm going to do this. So I love that attitude.
Yes.
Then we finally get to Brent Stephenson, and we've been getting hyped all episode. We're going to find out something new about Brent Stephenson and Casey Catanzaro. I don't know about you, but I was thinking, okay, they're married.
They got engaged.
Or they've broken up. And oh. it was the latter.
I was so sure they were engaged.
Like, oh, no.
I love weddings and I love engagements. And I was so excited. I was like, this is going to murder me. I'm going to cry so much. I love them. And then they drop this on me. Did it not seem like they were going to be engaged?
It was really weird the way that they did it, like just to kind of like build it up for the whole episode as if it might be good news. And then kind of like, yep. So yeah, we've broken up. Yeah.
I mean, that didn't even occur. I thought it would be so weird if they like hyped it up the way they did for them to have broken up. I don't know. I thought maybe she was pregnant. I don't know. Something.
Throughout their time on Ninja Warrior, I've thought they have hyped up, like, this is like a genuine, like, hyped up couple. How awkward would it be if they broke up? And it happened. And yes, it was awkward.
Yeah, I've thought about it a lot as well because they're business partners. They own a gym together. Yep. And they've just been through this whole experience together.
It was a weird segment, too. We've never seen a segment like this before. Just like, basically, so yeah, this is our announcement. We've broken up. And interesting, it was Brent's package. Casey got her own package that had nothing to do with the relationship.
Yeah, because I mean, as great as Brent is to most people watching, he's Casey's boyfriend.
Which is interesting because he was at one point the guy for American Ninja Warrior. He had gone the farthest of anyone.
Yeah, but I mean, millions more people started watching American Ninja Warrior in the last couple of seasons, and just no Casey and anyone affiliated with Casey is always going to be defined by their relationship to her. But yeah, it was weird. He was saying like, I mean, Casey was in his package a lot talking, like giving her own confessionals, just about how, you know, they're still business partners. And even though they're broken up, they're still partners. And it's like, isn't that what a relationship like means and what ending it entails, the end of the partnership?
It was weird. It was kind of awkward. They start very, you know, we are no longer a couple. It's been very hard. And then as soon as they got that over with, it was like, okay, now like damage control, nobody be too sad. Like we still work together. We still train together. We're still good friends. We're still partners, all this stuff. Still definitely weird feeling from this one, especially given the results of both of their runs. It was just like, it's kind of a downer.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it's hard for the show to do this tastefully, I feel like, just because it's the first time they're kind of dealing with like their contestants being a celebrity in their own right. Like sometimes they have people who are already celebrities on the show, but they're like breaking gossip about their own show's celebrity. And this is just something that American Ninja Warrior has never had to deal with before, because Casey is the most famous person and it's not even close. So when gossip surrounds her, it's something that everyone cares about.
Yep. So despite the fact that they're no longer in a relationship, she is cheering him on with his dad on the sidelines, which again, awkward.
Yeah.
It's just weird package. But anyway, he gets through most of the course, dominates the log runner, no problems whatsoever. But you can see him kind of struggling on the tire swing. He's taking a lot of time holding himself up, plotting out his moves, and eventually ends up having his grip run out on him on the second jump of the bar hop. He does not have the switch grip, so the bar just kind of rolls out from under his fingers and down he goes into the water.
Yeah, and he says that he thought about doing the switch grip and then decided not to do it because it's something that he hasn't practiced with, which, I mean, you would think that he has practiced this obstacle a lot, Or no, this is a new one. This is a new one. Never mind.
Well, I mean, it's the same. It's a very similar obstacle to the one on stage three. So I imagine that he would have trained.
Yeah,
for it.
At least something similar. So you would think that if he's not going to do the reverse grip, he would at least be really comfortable with the grip that he has, or he would start training with the reverse grip because that is just what has proven to work.
I do think that this is probably one of those instances where they felt like they always want to give some sort of definable reasons for why the person lost. And it might be the kind of thing where it really was just that his grip gave out and the switch grip might have helped, might not have helped. Ultimately, the point is he fails here, does not complete the qualifying course, but he still qualifies to get to the finals round.
Yeah, but it is a really weird note after that package to be like, go out the way that he does. Then it's like, oh, but you still qualify. It's just not quite the triumph, I think, that he was looking for really wants to see. Not very satisfying.
Brent has had a checkered past with these qualifying courses.
Yes, definitely not the most consistent performer.
No. Then we get Casey Catanzaro, finally, the 26-year-old gym owner. And she's really built up here, showing that clip of her saying, I did this amazing thing, but if I keep failing over and over, like, what does that mean? I was thinking, wow, are they really going to show this if she fails again?
Yeah. I mean, and as I mentioned earlier, I did not think that she was going to do it because she would have gotten the palm healthy thing. And also because she wasn't last. And I think that that might have been on the show's part, not having as much faith in her as they do someone like Daniel Gill. Like, they want to go out on a high note. They know that Daniel Gill is going to do it. I don't think the show really believes that Casey is going to be a lock for finishing the course. But that said, they show her interview where she's just sobbing after she really messed up the last time. And I cry every single time I watch that because she is just so sad. And I can only imagine the whole time that she was on the course, I was just thinking if she can just complete a course again, whether it's qualifying, final, whatever, if she can just complete a course again, then I feel like she regains control of her legacy because it's not just like, oh, she had a really on year because both of the courses that she finished were in the same year. So I was really hoping that she could just get through it.
Yeah, unfortunately, she doesn't, though. And I feel like this is just like mounting pressure on top of her. It's hard to handle if you don't do as well as people hype you up to be doing. Mm-hmm. And it gets to you. And I think that is probably a part of why she makes these kinds of mistakes like she did in Vegas last year, where she just misses the trampoline. And those are the worst kinds of ways to go out because you don't feel like you gave it your all. You feel like, oh, I just missed the trampoline. And that's why it's so heartbreaking. But we do see her do something very impressive, I thought, which was on the ring swing. After she hooks the first ring, I was just like, she's not going to make it all the way across. Like, she can't reach that second thing. It's way too far. But she does. She barely manages to. She gets her fingers on it. I just thought, this is why she's so incredible to watch. Because every time you see her do an obstacle, it's like, how can she do this? And then she manages to.
Yeah. I mean, she does. So I was really nervous for her on some of these obstacles that require a reach, especially the log runner, because she's tiny. The space between the logs is almost as tall as she is. But she does have, for her size, she's all leg and arms. She does have a pretty long wingspan for her size and also very long legs. So I think she definitely knows how to use her body. She's really in control of her body. She's a gymnast. But yeah, I was definitely the most nervous for her on the log runner because I follow her on Instagram and on Facebook, and just the things that she does in the gym, like, are just incredible. Her strength is just absolutely unbelievable. So I think for her, it's really going to be a mistake more times than it's going to be just not being able to do it.
And unfortunately, she does. She falls. She catches herself. She tries to do the crawl, but I think she's just too short to do that.
Yeah.
Tries to hold on, you know, just bear hug that log, but eventually falls off. And down goes Mighty Casey. But I'm sure that we're going to see her as a wild card.
Oh, I'm sure. And as you mentioned before in one of our podcasts, I think that you talked about people like doing a little dance before the obstacle that they're the most nervous about. I think this was one of those things too, where she looked to the crowd and took a long time before this obstacle, probably because it was the one that she was the most nervous about.
Yeah. Next, we get the final montage of the night. My favorite montage because it has one of my favorite competitors. At least he wasn't cut entirely from the show, despite not being asked back.
Yes.
We'll get to him in a second. First, we have Tim Wood, who falls on the log runner and splashes his own family with water.
Yeah. Was that on purpose? I couldn't tell what was going on.
I don't think so.
There.
I think he was just splashing generally. I did get splashed in Philadelphia just a little bit.
Ooh.
Sometimes people fall and it makes big splashes. Sometimes they make big splashes and sometimes they get their family wet, which is what happened with Tim Wood. Next, we got Tremaine Dortch.
Whom I love. I will make it known.
Strange that we skip him, but, you know, it happens. And of course, he clears the course. And then finally, my man, David Campbell, who was not asked to be on this season. He waited in the walk-on line in one of the cities and didn't get on. So he came to another city. He came to Oklahoma, waited again in the walk-on line and managed to get on. I believe he was also battling an injury with his ankle at the time. This guy, this is a man determined. He has competed in every single season. He is incredible. He also has his own, you know, backyard sort of obstacle course. Love, love, love David Campbell. And he gets the fastest time of the night.
Yes.
Sits on top of the buzzer.
Godfather shows that he should have been invited.
And should have been showed. But
yes,
at least he was in a montage, which is more than we can say for some other people.
Yes.
Then we get Thomas Stillings, the 22-year-old parkour instructor. And he's a guy we come in late on and then gets the fastest time of the night.
Yeah, with his genie pants.
Yes, with his purple genie pants. Very strange that he seemed like a big character too, like very enthusiastic and fun. Seems just like the kind of person they'd typically want to show, but we got very little from him, which was just weird.
And I know what you're thinking. Can we have a full 2 minutes with Christine where all we talk about are his pants? Well, I've got great news for you. We do. Christine asks him about his pants, and he says that his girlfriend gave them to him. And then Christine asks his girlfriend about the pants. And
she needed to investigate.
Yeah. Which was a really hard hitting interview that we all asked for, I guess, provided some levity after the whole Casey and Brent thing.
Yes. And something I noticed after his interview ends, he turns around, cheers to the crowd like, yeah, guys. And nobody is paying attention. They're all looking at who I believe is probably the next guy to run, Daniel Gill, probably at the start line at that moment. And yeah, just nobody responds.
Yeah, no love for Thomas Stillings.
And then finally, we get Daniel Gill, the 23-year-old worship leader. He has joined a professional dance company since last season.
Yes, and I love this because I am a dancer. I'm on a dance team at my school. And I have actually been surprised by how few dancers that we've seen, because dancers are some of the best athletes in the world. I imagine part of it is that if you're a professional dancer, that's all hours of your day. You don't really have time to train for obstacle courses. But I was glad to see him working on that. I think that it contributes a lot to overall athletic ability.
Yeah, probably dancers probably don't work the grip strength too much, but I don't know. Maybe they do. They hold on to other dancers, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. They would definitely have to train on certain skills, but I think that they have a really good foundation for obstacle courses in general.
Well, I just remembered one of our race car drivers from last episode won Dancing with the Stars. So yeah, there we go.
Because that's definitely the same as
we got a dancer.
Professional dancing. but yeah, so that was cool. He's also running on his birthday. What, his like 12th birthday? How old is he?
23.
Okay.
Yes, weirdly younger than me. So that's strange. Speeds through the course, no problems, as you would expect from Daniel Gill. This guy knows what's up. Ever since we saw him for the first time last year, I've been expecting big things, and he does not fail to deliver here. He's just under a second of the top time set by Thomas Stillings, leaving David Campbell in third, and gets to the top of the warped wall, and he goes, yeah, best birthday ever.
Yeah, and they talk about his hair. Way too much.
Yeah, way too much. We need to drop the hair angle.
Find something else.
Yeah. Hopefully there's more to him than just his hair.
Yeah. And then he comes down and has like a weird rivalry with Thomas Stillings.
Yeah. Who is this guy?
So
where
weird.
Did he come from? Why is he here?
Yeah. Christine is like, oh, you just missed the best time. But, you know, to Thomas. And he was just like, it's just the qualifiers next time. Like they have an ongoing like rivalry with each other, like friend thing, which, okay,
it's very abrupt.
Yeah
So that's our episode, Oklahoma City. What'd you think overall?
It was not my favorite episode that we've seen so far. I mean, we had some really big disappointments in Casey and Sam San and Brent not finishing. I didn't feel like we had any super memorable new people. I mean, a lot of great, great performances, but overall, middle of the road episode for me. How about you?
It had some high points, it had some low points, and it had some very weird points.
Yes.
That's basically what I thought about it.
Yeah, I mean, we only had a couple of the tearjerker stories, and they weren't, you know, the most memorable ones that we've seen. And we had a couple of weird people, but no absolutely crazy people. So, yeah, it was a fine episode. I'm looking forward to Philly, where some of my favorites are going to be.
Next week, we have the Philadelphia qualifying round. I was there in the audience. If you care to see me, you might be able to. I don't know. Probably not. Who's going to be looking at the audience? You want to watch the runners?
I'll be sure to only pay attention to that, so our podcast next week is really boring because I'm just talking about your facial expressions. Yeah,
well, it's just all right. So next up, we had Joe Morofsky
and Taryn. Yeah, looking
Taryn
at
was
phone.
Super enthusiastic. Yeah,
being a terrible audience member.
I assume he did really well because Taryn looked really happy. So
yeah, but I had it on mute. So
yeah, so I'll definitely have a lot to say there. I think it'll be a good episode. I think that hopefully the best episode, I think. So high hopes.
Yeah. Another week, another time change, because it wouldn't be American Ninja Warrior if it didn't.
Is it another time change?
It's on at 9 next week. Yeah, I guess to appeal to only me as the person conflicted between The Bachelorette and American Ninja Warrior, although they still overlap by an hour, just less overlap. Yeah, I don't know if something's happening on NBC. There's probably some event that I've never heard of, some sports thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. But
some sports.
Be sure to make sure that your DVR is caught up with that, everyone.
Yeah, so next episode, I will probably do some chronicling of my time in Philadelphia. I'll tell the story. It's definitely super interesting. Everybody will love it. It's crazy twists and turns. So tune in.
And we might even touch on some of the contestants and how they did.
We might end up talking about them, but let's face it, it's all about me.
Your run as an audience member.
Yes, I'm the star of the Philadelphia episode. Everyone's going to be talking about me. Phenomenal crowd performance. So, yeah.
I'll probably say a lot of mean things about Philadelphia because people from where I'm from don't like there.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was nice. I expected bad things. It was a nice place.
Because you've never been to Western Pennsylvania. Haven't seen the true PA.
The true PA. Oh,
yeah.
My.
Eastern Pennsylvania. Just a setting for Pretty Little Liars as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I guess that's just PA.
Yeah, exactly. PA over here stands for pretty awesome.
Okay.
I saw that on a shirt once.
Okay, there you go. So yes, that is our episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to help us out, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, American Ninja Warrior. You can also subscribe to the Rehap Ups feed, Reality TV Rehap Ups. You will also get all of the other excellent podcasts, including the Rehappy Hour, the Bachelorette podcast, and the Challenge stuff. All of that great, amazing content. Better than the shows themselves, if I do say so myself.
In the case of the MTV shows, certainly. As someone who watches them.
Yes, and also please give us a rating and a review on iTunes. That is greatly helpful. We will love you forever if you do so. We love all of the like 6 people that have done so far. So thank you so much. And lastly, follow us and tweet at us on Twitter. I am at Taryn Armstrong. Lita is at newsaf_intern. We love when you talk to us. We love interacting with you. And I love sending little gifts your way that express my confusion at your sports references.
You are the gift master.
Not really, but we can pretend. So thank you for joining us. We will see you next time.